You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Sachin.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Happy to be here.
Sachin, for those who haven't come across you, introduce yourself, give our listeners your name, and tell them just a bit about what's hot. Why are we talking tonight?
Well, first off, thank you for having me. As you mentioned, my name is Sachin Shah, and we are here because I am passionate about solving a problem. The problem that we are solving is, as you know, veganism is a growing movement, and there's a lot of people out there, 6% of the United States, growing very fast, that are looking for medications that don't contain any animal-derived ingredients. So, a lot of my patients would come and ask me, saying, can you find me an Advil or a Tylenol that don't contain animal-derived ingredients? And it would take me as 8 hours to go through the package insert and figure that out. And that's not a fun problem to have. So we decided to solve that, and we launched Vegan Med.
I know you always are asked this question, but I got to know what angle I'm coming at this from. So it's important for me to know if you're a vegan or not.
Oh, yes. So I am a vegan, but there are times when I cheat only because I don't have a choice or something like that, and we compromise. So truthfully, I'm an aspiring vegan. I try as well as I can, and that's part of the story too. So, but you know, for now, yes, aspiring vegan with some cheat days. Yeah.
I was a vegan for a year back about 2 years ago because I've got two daughters that are vegans, but they would not cheat because they're doing this for poor cows with the big brown eyes who they don't want to see, you know, killed for their dad to eat and so on. So I did it for about a year. I forget why I quit, but I quit. What's an example of somewhere where you'll be and you say, not tonight. Tonight I'm going to go for that ice cream sundae. What's an example of that?
So I've been a vegetarian all my life. So for me, going vegan is not hard. But what is included in part of the vegetarian diet can be dairy and cheese and things like that. Now, there are circumstances when I go to somebody's house and they have no idea that, you know, I'm not eating cheese or something like that. And I just don't want them to feel awkward. And I'm working in that area where, you know, just to make it work, I will compromise and eat cheese or dairy or something like that. But I try where I can. I try and inform people when I can, and we try the best that we do. Now, it's funny you bring this up, and I'll go back to some of your previous points. Is I think fundamentally, I believe that all humans want to do good. And even when it comes to vegans, you know, finding clothes that are so-called without any animal-based products sometimes can be easy. Finding food can be easy too at times. But when it comes to medications, people just don't know. And so, in fact, I would say even vegans compromise when it comes to medications. 3 out of 4 oral medications contain animal-derived ingredients in them. And, you know, people don't know, you know, there's some data out there that 84% of patients out there don't know that there are animal-derived ingredients in medications. 70% of doctors don't know about that either. So, you know, so I'm giving you an example with some data saying there are areas where we try, we mean well, but we may not have the options. But sometimes the options are feasible.
Why don't they know? Is it because it's not on the package, or it's because they don't understand that gelatin, something or other, is animal-based?
You put a, you know, pharmaceutical product or a supplement or something like that in front of somebody, and it has 15 ingredients with complex chemical-sounding names, even pharmacists have to look it up, and even doctors have to look it up. So one is, it's hard to decipher what is in there. And that's why you'll see this new age of products where it'll say ingredients you can understand. Like, that's a new thing that everybody's doing, right? So when it comes to pharma, one of them, or when it comes to products and supplements, one of them is just people don't know how to decipher ingredients. The second part of it is often It is in the inactive ingredients that these animal-based products are there. So fillers, you know, something to coat the tablet. And when we think of inactive ingredients, they're in small print. People aren't thinking about it.
The OTC products, are they allowed just to say inert or inactive ingredients, or do they have to list everything?
Well, no, they have to list everything, but they list all the inactive ingredients, and typically they are in the order of like highest concentration to lowest concentration from a supplement standpoint. But you know, when we go look for a product, generally we are thinking of, hey, I want something for pain or rash, and you're looking at the active ingredient, and then you just glance over the inactive.
Vegan Med. So is that a spot where customers are buying from there, or is it an information website?
We are very mission-oriented, and we really want to just help people out. And we said, how can we go about doing that? So the first thing is we have an online shop or, you know, store or whatever you want to call it, where people can go. It's free, and it basically takes them directly to like an Amazon type portal. So you go find a product, you click on it, and then you go to Amazon and you buy it like you normally would.
Truly, it goes to Amazon or Amazon like?
No, truly Amazon. And I said Amazon like because we could change things in the future. There are other companies that are opening up, like Walmart and, you know, etc. So I said Amazon like, but right now we're 100% Amazon, yes.
Gotcha. So you could send them to somewhere. And so that's just a change of direction in the background. Do you guys get some kind of a percentage from Amazon when you direct somebody?
Yes. So there is a small percent that we get when you're directing somebody to Amazon, correct?
Oh, that's cool. And that's where sometimes people will put like Amazon links on their blog or something like that. But you've done it with the vegan part of it.
Correct. So for example, right now you can go to Amazon and you can find an Advil 200 milligrams, 80 count. And like the one that's on our webpage is like, let's say a little under $9. And then you can also find another product that's Advil 200 milligrams, gelatin based, and you know, it may be around the same price or maybe like about a little bit more. And you know, you have two options. One has an animal based ingredient, the other one doesn't. Both are the same active molecule, and it makes it easier for people to go with the one. And I think it's just makes them feel nicer when they know about it.
Will this go to RX?
Great question, because RX is the space that you want to solve that problem as well. But right now, the way to do that is they would have to kind of email us or contact us and say, hey, I'm looking for a, you know, Viagra, or I'm looking for a atorvastatin that does not have animal-derived ingredients. And we will, at no cost right now, just do the work for them. We'll reach out to the manufacturer and, you know, figure out all the back-end stuff, because you know, and right now, you know, we don't support any products or brands or anything like that. So this is not like one way or, you know, any kind of endorsement by any means. And nothing I say here is medical advice. I should say that as well. But we will do the back end work, because sometimes when customers will call a drug information line, they don't even know what to ask and how to do that. And a pharmacist can help facilitate that. And sometimes if you don't ask the right way, you can get the wrong answer. And that has happened to us where, you know, two different times, same kind of question being asked, you get two different answers.
My problem is when you said, don't take this as medical advice, I wear a sign on my chest at the pharmacy like that all day, so nobody takes what I say as gospel truth.
Yeah, so the prescription piece is also something that we are solving. The way to get to that is we realize to have our own certification mark. Now, we don't call it vegan. We're calling it animal-free because, as you know, when it comes to veganism, the concept includes no animal testing. So we use the word animal-free because it's a little bit more accurate. Mike, what's interesting is the American Medical Association passed a policy a couple of years ago because this was an emerging and important topic, and they said we encourage manufacturers to disclose any animal-derived ingredients that may be in these products. So for that reason, you know, pharmaceutical companies also have it on their radar, and we're also working with them to try and solve some of these problems. So the second thing that we're doing for consumers is having this. So if you had a product like, you know, Advil, and you called it vegan, it would not be accurate because at some point somebody tested Advil on some animal. So the only real term to use is you know, animal free.
On your website, it says that you've connected, you know, you've your stuff has been touched by a billion people, or that's a seventh of the world. What does that mean?
Well, that's talking about media impressions, and it's referring to my other life that is not connected to VeganMed, but I'm happy to talk about it, which is I am a researcher at heart, you know. So when I graduated from pharmacy school, you know, I had to make a career decision saying, what do I want to do when I grow up? And I said, you know what? I want to do meaningful things, so I'm going to go be a poor academician. So I decided to go and join academia, and we worked on things that we felt were driving value to society. So, for example, one of the technologies we worked on is called enhanced external counterpulsation, and not too many people know about it, but essentially what it is blood pressure-like cuffs that squeeze on the legs. And they basically help patients with chest pain or angina. And what they do is they grow new blood vessels in the heart. And the Reader's Digest, you know, several years ago, there was an article in there, and they called it a natural bypass surgery. Because you're just squeezing externally on the legs, and you're growing new blood vessels in the heart. And, you know, it had been around for 50 years. And we said, people need to learn about this. People need to know about this. So we've been doing research for the last 10, 12 years in that space.
What does that mean, we?
I am part of University of the Pacific. So I'm a professor of pharmacy there. And I've been doing research there for the last 12, 13 years. And EECP was, you know, one of the first things that I had started working on. And recently, I joined this very interesting company called Legacy Heart Care. And they are the premier providers of EECP therapy around the country. So, you know, now we're doing some fun things there and trying to take it to the next level.
Do you teach at all?
I do. I take students who are in their final year of pharmacy school. I might have a practice site at a military base, believe it or not, and talk about, you know, new experiences. How many pharmacy students get to go check out a military base? So you know, and when I said we, that includes our partners at the military base, and we've been doing some EECP research there. We've been doing some energy drink research. We've been doing some supplement research, and all of that ties into the overall media impressions that we've been able to you know, create and contribute to.
I think I'd like to volunteer for that. I love when they do that blood pressure cuff, you know, on your arm. And I can just picture sitting there with those balloons around my legs and just...
Yeah, come on down. Most welcome. You will enjoy it. You got to do 35 sessions. But just the concept that you can squeeze outside and grow new blood vessels in the heart is just, it's just incredible.
How long are the sessions?
So it's about an hour a day for about 7 weeks. So five days a week times 7 weeks. You know, most insurance companies pay for it, FDA approved.
So basically you're taking a bag filled with, the bottom of the bag would be the legs, and you're pushing it, and that fluid's got to go somewhere. And so it goes into new rivers, new areas.
You said it perfectly. New rivers. It just, you know, floods these channels in your heart, and all that perfusion decreases the chest pain and the workload on the heart. Yeah.
Would you call VeganMed your first entrepreneurial attempt, let's say?
I would call VeganMed my first serious entrepreneurial endeavor.
Your first serious one.
Because, you know, sometimes, you know, this is something that's in your DNA, and maybe you were five and you did something and you tried something, and right? So you always have this itch, and you're always sharpening that skill. But yes, what I've had in me since I was really young is to do meaningful stuff. And even right now, you know, one day we have money, one day we don't. One day we have pride and fame, and one day we don't. So all of that is fine. But my real passion is to do meaningful things. And since I was five, I've been wanting to, you know, just help people, help society from a healthcare, in the healthcare space. So that drive and passion and grit I've had. So right now, this is just a function of that passion, you know, materializing into an entrepreneurial endeavor.
Tell me about your TED Talk. How do you get on TED?
How do you get on TED? Maybe that's a different talk on its own, right?
That's a whole thing on its own. You were at a TEDx.
I was at TEDx, correct. And, you know, it's a very interesting story. I grew up, you know, in a deeply spiritual environment, and spirituality is the core of a lot of I do, and I think it just makes me a whole person. Now, when you have that in your DNA, for lack of a better word, you know, you talk about certain concepts that are rooted in there, but you're not, you know, packaging it in that form. So there were some concepts that I would talk about that have to do with mind, because, you know, I'm talking to students and they need to be motivated from time to time, and we kind of tell them about, hey, you know, the goals, aspirations, and having a strong mind. And, you know, I would talk about some of these concepts, and a couple of my students said, this is really good, and you probably should be giving a TED talk on this. And it was a little bit of a joke, and one guy was serious about it, and he said, I really would like you to send this in. So I did it, and they liked it. Now, what is interesting about this is when I'd send them a small little proposal, they liked the last line of that proposal where I said, I ate food, you know, one bite on the first day, two bites on the second day, three bites on the third day. And they said, forget the rest. We want you to just talk about that. So it was, so it evolved from one little concept that, you know, seemed like, you know, an atypical feat for people. And then I had to develop that into that talk, which was on the power of the mind, which I truly believe that we all as society could be spending more time in that space. COVID has maybe, you know, been something that has maybe helped us appreciate that we probably should be spending a little bit more time in that space. And now there are new apps, you know, and again, I don't endorse any, but like Headspace and others like that, that are coming up, and they're genuinely helping people.
Did they just like the last line because it had a nice punch to it? Or was that quite a bit different from the rest of your proposal?
The last line was very factual. So the rest of it is conceptual. The last line was like, I did this. It doesn't matter the story. You did something, and this just seems so cool. So just go talk about that. I think that's what it was.
Is that typical in TED that they want something that's something to latch onto? I mean, a lot of their things are kind of heady though, right? Or do they usually have stuff that's more like, here's what I want to send you forth with?
I think generally people like simple concepts. Generally, people like things that are easily palatable, and food is something that everybody appreciates. And you tell them something like, I didn't eat for 4 days. You know, you're at a party and you say something like that. People are going to want to know, you know, what were you thinking? How did you do it? What did you learn from it? So I think it's something that was simple. It was digestible and intriguing. This, the whole concept of TED is so unique, right? How they do it. They don't really have major introductions at the start like you see in a movie, right? They just jump into it because in this day and age, our attention span is so short that they know that we need to get people's attention within the first, you know, 10 seconds or else we have lost them.
Well, I've taken some of that here on the podcast. A lot of the times, I'll be listening to a show and I'll fast forward by a minute or two and they're still talking about, you know, their first year of school. They did this and then they did this. And sometimes it's not a few minutes till they get in there. I always try to get my questions in first. People say you never know what tomorrow's going to bring. I never know what the next 10 minutes is going to bring. You got to hit that first stuff quickly. TED must have been kind of cool because even though your students told you to do some of this, you probably don't have it available to go talk to your students for an hour about an idea like that, right? You're probably throwing bits in while you're still trying to progress on the other stuff.
Yes, exactly.
I don't always like to say what's a goal, because goals mean that you haven't done what you set out to do. It's like, well, I'm still going for the goal. It's like, no, you might have hit the goal by doing what you're doing. So would you say you have hit your goals yet in vegan med, or is there more to grow, not just grow revenue-wise, but is there more to grow with ideas and things like that in there?
Yeah, you know, metaphorically speaking, I might even say we haven't even started. There is a lot more to do. And I say that not because we haven't literally started. Of course, we have. But I think there's a huge impact we can make. This certification program that I'm talking about, the people that can benefit from having an alternative. So, for example, gelatin. You know, if we made a transition to using a plant-based capsule, That is 14% of the oral products out there are is made of gelatin. If you went to a plant-based capsule, that is having a huge impact. Magnesium stearate is in 50% of, you know, the formulations, the oral formulations out there. It can come from an animal source or it can come from a plant source. If we switch to a plant source, would have a huge impact. And I know a lot of these large corporations have certain goals, like, you know, 25% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2025. So these little things are tangible ways that we can have a positive impact. Now, you think about companies like, you know, Beyond Meat or Impossible, you know, that are creating these plant-based meats, for lack of a better word. And where do they position their product in the grocery aisle? They actually put it right next to the meats. And that's because they want to say, hey, this is not only for the vegetarians or the vegans of the world, but it is also for the meat eaters. You know, and sometimes I have seen this. I know some meat eaters, they couldn't distinguish between the two products. So how does that apply to Vegan Med, that concept? It applies because the problem we are solving is not just for vegans or vegetarians, but it is also for the people that just want to do well. And when given a choice like two Advils, one has animal ingredients, one does not, they're both equal, I would bet, you know, that 9 times out of 10, if not more, people are going to take the choice that's just kinder in the world.
Kinder to animals.
Kinder to animals, correct.
Devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. Some people hate vegans.
Yep.
Why do they hate them?
I think that it has to do with people. Some people hate schools and some people hate organized religion. And there's so many different things that people have a dislike for, right? And I think that sometimes the dislike is for actions of certain individuals, you know, within that group. But it doesn't mean that the group is necessarily bad, or it doesn't mean that the philosophy is necessarily bad. So I believe that, you know, are there some people out there who maybe doing things that are extreme, for lack of a better word, and they're kind of representations of that organization or that philosophy, maybe. And maybe that's why there's a little bit of dislike or, you know, hatred or whatever word you want to use. But I think that personally, the philosophy is beautiful. But, you know, sometimes it's a misinterpretation or overinterpretation, and then the actions may not align.
Like I say, I'm living with a couple of the vegans, you know, and I think sometimes that the concept is good, but sometimes, and I'm not going to put my daughters in this category, but sometimes the people, by people's human nature, they can take a concept and then they can come across, and some people truly, not only do they come across this way, you know that they actually feel that they're better than you. And not even feel that, but by certain things they say, they come across as being holier than next people. And we know how that can happen, you know, from my, from my Catholic upbringing. Yeah, I like the concepts, but this guy is really not a good person because they've lorded it over, you know, someone else. So I think there's a difference between the concept and then maybe the people you know that have followed that concept, you know?
You know, Mike, when we were kids, we liked that, you know, plastic car that our parents might have gotten us. And then we got tired of that. And then we wanted a real bicycle. And then we wanted a used car. And then we wanted a new car. So as time goes on, you know, our concepts and things that bring us joy and our experiences change. And they probably mature over time. So in the same way that I have learned, and this is where my guru's guidance or spirituality comes in, I have learned that, you know, I don't feel that I'm in any place to judge anybody, right? Because if I were in their shoes and I had the same exposure and life experiences that they went through, I might be doing the same things. I might be doing the same type of actions.
From a marketing standpoint, you're not concerned about the person that doesn't like you. You've got to go after that niche that does care for you. I've got that at the pharmacy where I lost a ton of staff this last year. Some were happy with me. Some were maybe not so happy with me. And I've got customers that come and go. But I try to tell myself, well, right now there's 20 people that want to work for me. There's thousand whatever customers that want to be my customer, and I'm not going to be concerned with the other 20 that don't want to work for me now, because it's not just 20 that don't want to work for me. It's like 7 billion that don't want to work for me, you know? And it's not just some customers that don't want to come to my pharmacy. It's like 7 billion that don't want to come to my pharmacy. So where does that end if you're looking at that? You know, you've got to really just concentrate on the ones that, you know, want the vegan, want anything in that regard.
Right.
Tell me from a business perspective and a marketing perspective what that logo would be. And I imagine it's along the lines of a good housekeeping seal of approval. Would there be a charge? Would it be an application process? What's the business behind a certification like that?
If you are a manufacturer of a product, how does that work? So right now, what that means is, what is unique about our certification program is, A, we have a team of pharmacists and experts that are looking at it. And second, we have also incorporated lab testing, which other people have not, right? Now, there's no such thing as a vegan test, right? But there are certain ingredients that we can test for, you know? So we do test for what we can. So we've incorporated that into our testing, which is what differentiates us from others, right? The third piece in terms of the process itself, you know, we work with the company directly. It's an annual fee that they pay, that gives them the rights to display the logo on their product. And it can be 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, depending on the contract. And then they renew it every so often.
That in theory would end up on their product in like a store?
Correct. So just how when you go into a product and we have the, you know, I'll use a pharmacy example, USP, United States Pharmacopeia, we see the organic symbol at from time to time. So it'll be just on the product itself.
What do you look at to see how things are going with the vegan med? Are you looking at visits or purchases, or what's the most exciting for you, or something that you think means the most to you right now, as far as looking at your like analytics and stuff on your website?
Well, helping people is what's the most meaningful, because for the people that reach out to us and say, hey, can you help me identify this product? And yes, it takes us 15 phone calls to figure that out. But, you know, just the joy on people's faces when we can help them out, I think that's a metric. But the metric relative to what you were asking is, you know, in social media, sometimes they use this term like monthly active users. So how many monthly active users are coming to your webpage? And we do have a good number coming. And which products are the more popular one that people are looking at than they're buying off of Amazon? And that's one aspect of it. Now, you know, we aren't entirely monetizing that, because we do want to help people to try and get access to products directly and just give them information. So part of our business model includes, you know, working with the manufacturer and charge them this modest certification fee. And so that's a metric that I'm going to be focusing on for 2021 to kind of grow at a hopefully exponential rate, to work with more, you know, supplements and pharmaceutical grade companies to get them certified.
How has the reception been from companies?
Usually when it comes to these type of things, there is three answers, right? There is yes, there is no, and we shall see, right? So fortunately, nobody has said, hey, you're up to no good or anything like that. You know, I think the piece that is often a challenge is, you know, the resource that they need to put in to make some of the changes if they're not using a ingredient that is not from an animal source. So for example, if they are using animal-based magnesium stearate, the effort it takes to change some of that out, or, you know, just some budgetary things, you know, and it's the cycle, or they're not making, and if it's a small company, they might have already made the lot that they might be using for the full year, and it's already produced. So they're not making the next lot until the next year. But, you know, people have been very receptive, you know, to the concept. And I think that as we grow, things will be great and be rewarding.
So some of these you're coming to and you're saying you've got a trace of animal product in there, and I'm sure they know, but they might not care, and they might just as soon have it not be if there's options that they can do. And there's probably no one that's going to be hurt. I mean, maybe time-wise, maybe financial-wise, but there's no one that's going to be hurt marketing-wise probably by saying that they're all plant. I mean, no one says we make these vitamins for the cowboy. We've got a lot of good animal byproducts. And I mean, right? I mean, there's nobody trying to put animal stuff into it.
Correct. And I think sometimes it's just a function of what maybe their scientists are doing naturally. They're always used to using this vendor, and that's just, you know, it's an inactive ingredient. Maybe they're just not thinking about it. So, you know, you create awareness, you make people think about it, and then you give them numbers in terms of the impact that they're having. Now, there is a lot of data out there. For example, there was a survey that was done out of the UK, over 1,000 people, and they said 69% of the people would consider even switching supermarkets if they had products that were labeled, you know, vegan or accordingly. That's a pretty big number. And in our surveys, we have found that there are people, A, who would be willing to pay more money if, even if the, you know, the products were animal free, they care about that, they'd be willing to pay a little bit more money for it. The other piece that we have learned is that, you know, there are people out there who will not take any products that have animal ingredients in them. And that's a small percent, I would say 1%. You know, but the question that we had asked is, you know, if you needed a life-saving drug and your doctor said you needed it, but it had animal ingredients, would you not take it? A very small percent actually said, yeah, they wouldn't take it. And, you know, I'm definitely, you know, as a pharmacist and in healthcare, I'm not necessarily promoting that, but I respect that person's choices. But I would love for us to have an option for them, right? And, you know, talking about numbers, you know, when we looked at the vegan and the vegetarian market, 94% of the, you know, folks that we surveyed basically said they want an independent certified product that says no animal ingredients. And what is interesting is even the people that were not vegans or vegetarian, 48% of them said, yeah, they would love to have a product that has no animal-based ingredients.
I imagine my daughters probably wouldn't take medicine that had animal in it. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe if it was between that and, you know, death or something, they would, but I'm not sure. I'll have to ask them that sometime. Are there still some horror stories of well-known companies that are doing, you know, animal cruelty and stuff like that? Or has that ended? Or
I can't say it has ended. What I can say is people are making efforts to try and cut it down or curb it to the extent possible. There are even some companies that have developed alternative technologies that cut out animal testing. And if you go, for example, you mentioned PETA, so I'll use them as an example. If you go to their webpage, you know, there have been open declarations of some companies, you know, cutting out certain types of testing that uses animals. You know, some companies just limiting their amount of animal usage or not using a certain type of animal. So there are efforts going on in that manner. And I commend the folks that are kind of working on that mission. And I commend the companies that are embracing it.
One story I was going to mention earlier is that I had some medicine I was taking. And if I swallowed this stuff without a full glass of water, I would actually get nauseated. And you know the nausea, like you feel like someone just stuck you right under the ear with like lemon, and then you're over the sink and you're going, and you're drooling like a gallon a minute and you're ready to barf, you know? I was getting that from this medicine, and it was funny because it happened right away. It happened like within 2 minutes. So I knew it wasn't a body drug mechanism. I knew it had something to do with not getting it down the pipe. And I ended up buying these big vegan clear capsules, and I would put my capsule inside of these and I could swallow it right down. You know, it was no problem. It was remarkable. And I'm always like, I've had so many people over the years complaining about stuff like that at the pharmacy. And when they leave, I say, that's a bunch of BS. It's on their head. You know, I've said so many people have been imagining things, but boy, I tell you, that was not imagining it because it was something. What are some things that people would be surprised or they would look for that they say, oh, I didn't know that was, I had no idea that was animal stuff. What are some hidden surprises that people might come across?
So, you know, we have thrown around magnesium stearate, lactose, and gelatin. So I think those are common ones that people will know. But the drug Premarin, it actually came from this particular sentence, which is pregnant mare's urine, because that's where it's extracted from. You know, another one is shellac. Like shellac is often used in like nail polish, pharmaceutical glaze, and that's coming from insects. And then carmine, it's a coloring agent, and it comes from what they call cochineal bugs. You know, so they have these reddish tint to them, and that's where they get the coloring agent. And, you know, we talked about common ones. Glycerin is a common one that can be animal sourced as well. Lanolin comes from sheep wool, and then heparin. There are some synthetic ones out there, but typically, you know, heparin's coming from a you know, porcine or a bovine source. Hepar, H-E-P-A-R, like so heparin, you take the first, you know, 2/3 of that, comes from the Latin word like a dog liver. So back in the day, that's where they were getting it from. So now it's, you know, from my understanding, like mucosal tissue of slaughtered animals is where they're pulling it from. And so here's a fun fact. I actually grew up in Africa. I was there till 17 years, East Africa, Tanzania. And, you know, the Serengeti, you know, the national parks were all there. And, you know, I grew up having seen lions, tigers, elephants, you know, quite often. Not too many tigers in Africa, but, you know, when we would travel to other countries like India, we saw tigers. But yeah, so, you know, maybe there was, you know, a latent influence, because now you go to Africa and you don't get to see these huge herds of elephants because they're dwindling down. They're getting poached.
Were you born there in Africa?
Born and raised.
What brought you to the U.S.?
School. So I came to Mass College of Pharmacy in Boston, and it was college.
Is your family still in Africa?
My family just moved out of Africa, so they're currently in India, and you know, they kind of are globetrotters now.
I drive home, and every day I come home, I always see, like, and I'm right in the city. I mean, I'm not in the high building city, but you know, the Grand Rapids is 2 miles from my house. Okay, so I'm basically in this city. I got all kinds of neighbors and stuff. But there's always deer running back and forth. You know, deer, all these deer. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, that this big of an animal is running around. Now, when you talked about Africa, it's not like you'd be driving home and this giraffe would go across the street. These are all in like the bigger preserve. Are there any African animals that are just running around neighborhoods?
I am young enough to have only heard about this in terms of stories, but like when my parents moved there, you know, in the early 80s, you know, they used to tell us that just up until about 5-10 years ago, they used to have lions come to where our neighborhood was. But then cities grow and, you know, the animals kind of get further deeper in. But like, yeah, we could drive an hour and a half, 2 hours, and you are in like the thick forest and, you know, it's lions galore. So it's not too far.
In the U.S., is that like though there's a national park and you needed a sticker to get in there and that kind of stuff? It's huge, but you had to know you were driving into it because it's a sign or something like that.
Correct. And again, just like the national parks here, it's not like there's necessarily a fence. So some of the local communities, and you might have seen this on TV, like the Maasai's, the indigenous folks are living there, and yeah, and they will have, you know, lions and elephants as part of their backyard.
Oh, because they're living there.
Yeah,
kind of like here where the national park, the road going in might have a little booth or something like that, but all around it there's not a fence around Yellowstone or something like that.
Correct.
So what animals would you still see? Like where we might see deer still, are there any animals around the cities in Africa?
Not the big cities. No, you won't see things like that there other than the usual.
I don't mean elephants. I just mean like deer or something.
Yeah, so you can see deer, you know, slightly further away from the city. So I wouldn't say that, you know, at least in Tanzania, in the big cities, you wouldn't see that. It's now all further away, you know, and it's very modern. You see, you know, high rise buildings, you see hotels, you get all the fancy food, like, you know, international food and all of that. So it's not like, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're not riding zebras and elephants to school, right?
So I bet that's hard to get that across to people.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, the thing that Africa is known is for the big, you know, five game animals, which is the lions, the leopard, the rhino, the elephant, and the buffalo. So those are fun to watch.
And the giraffe.
Of course, the giraffe.
10 years from now, I know that you're going to be doing good for the world. I know you're going to be serving people. But if you had your choice, what might that look like? What might you be doing? Would you be in this big business? Would you be at college still? What might your life look like in 10 years?
Well, I'll start with where you started. I would still be in the business of sharing happiness and doing meaningful things. But how do you do that? I probably wouldn't be doing this through multiple platforms that I'm engaged with right now. I would probably, you know, cut some of them out. Ideally, I would want, you know, Vegan Med to flourish really well, and I'd be spending a lot of time there. But it wouldn't be unreasonable if in about 10 years we can bring in, or sooner ideally, bring in another leader who can take that and move the mission forward. And I could possibly spend some of my time in some other meaningful endeavors that are I think, equally important or can contribute to healthcare and science in a meaningful manner.
What might that look like? Would it still be businessy?
Yes, it could be businessy. I believe that there is a lot of things in the space of the mind, transcendental meditation, yoga, that needs discovery. I think that there is true science there that we need to understand that transforms into changes, physiological changes in the body. So I think we need to appreciate that. There's other pieces of science, and this may sound like science fiction, but it is not, where, Mike, you know the blood pressure machine, right? And we think of it as two numbers, the systolic and the diastolic. But the blood pressure waveform has a shape. It's not just 120 and 80. It goes from 120 to 118 to 116. And the time it takes to get from there, from 120 to 80, all of that is meaningful. Now, there are things that you can decode with artificial intelligence and other things. You can decode that for doing disease diagnostics. And I think that we're going to get into a space where you can use non-invasive technology. We can use that type of systems to diagnose things like cancer. So imagine now wearing a blood pressure cuff and you can say, oh, this person might be pregnant or this person might be having cancer. And part of this comes from an ancient science called Ayurvedic science that comes from the Indian subcontinent. And they used to do that. Even the Chinese doctors used to do that, where they would take, and you might have seen images of this, they take like three fingers, they put it on your wrist, and they tell you, oh, you have this medical condition going on. And it seems like voodoo, but as we are evolving, we are realizing that there is some science there, and we just need to unlock it, right? It's, you know, a bad analogy, but in parallel is smoking. Back in the day, it used to be cool until we figured out it's not good for you and it causes cancer. We just had to unlock the science and understand it a little bit better. In the same way, what we used to do thousands of years ago from a diagnostic standpoint, we can use technology to learn from it.
What is your medical research? I think you mentioned it. Is it on the blood pressure stuff?
So I was trained after pharmacy school out of Hartford Hospital and University of Connecticut. Had a tremendous opportunity to do clinical research training. So, and in the space of cardiology. So my passion areas are preventive cardiology, and I spend time in that space. Now, if that means that we're optimizing cardiovascular drugs, if that means that we're optimizing supplements, and if that means that we're optimizing devices, we'll do all of it. Everything that I'm working on somehow ties and marries together, including Vegan Med, right? It is in the space of medicine. It is in the space of patient care and optimizing a unique problem that we need solved. And you know, it has a bigger impact than what can be easily be seen, because it's not a machine, it's not a broken arm that you're fixing, right? But it's a problem that impacts everybody. So as long as it's within healthcare, as long as it's within drugs, supplements, and devices, and ideally within cardiology, I'll be playing in that space. I don't plan to retire, Mike. So, you know, this 10-year goal and 20-year goal, I intend to work to as long as that I can.
Let me throw this out at you. If you could get into something quickly like Vegan Med and kind of get it going with some leader coming in, like you've really put your mark on it, could you do that every 3 years if your finances allowed? Wouldn't be too soon. It almost sounds like you're more startup idea, let's get it to a certain spot, but maybe long-term management of something is not in your desire, and it's more a pattern of having the idea, doing something with it, and then recycling.
It comes down to building a team, and I think that I want to do good work with good people. And so, for example, if there was an offer on the table and it had the opportunity to make a lot of money, but if the team was not cohesive, I would surely walk away. So for me, with Vegan Med, if we can build a good team and do meaningful things, and if I can spend that time and have a greater production on another project, then it's 1 + 1 = 3 type of a scenario. But I don't know what the future holds. If Vegan Med does really well, or something else does really well, and we can fund some of these other projects, then we would have more control, more autonomy to do them in the way that we would like to do them. And that's a possibility too. You know, I do have to say I'm very grateful for the people that I've crossed paths with and, you know, just very meaningful relationships, and, you know, just be a dream to work with many of them over time.
Well, Sachin, golly, nice to meet you. That was really interesting information. It took me to an area that I never thought of.
Well, thank you for having me on here, and thank you for what you do. You know, you are also a pharmacist, so I understand your background, but you, using your unique platform, are letting other voices be heard around the country. So thank you for what you do.
What I like about the podcast platform, I like a lot of things about it, but it's cool because episodes don't really get dated per se. You know, they're not news. They're more of a deeper introspection or deeper journey into what's going on. And I think they have some staying power because of the interesting guests that we're on. So it's an honor to add you to the library.
Well, the pleasure's mine. And thank you again.
All right, Sachin, you take care.
You too. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.